Why would a modern commentator say that Ephesians may be the most influential document ever written? Welcome to The Good Word. I am your host, Alden Thompson, Professor Emeritus in Biblical Studies from Walla Walla University. My conversation partners are John McVeigh, President of Walla Walla University, and Brent Berglund, current member of the Walla Walla University School of Theology. He, as well as John McVeigh, are both New Testament scholars. Indeed, John McVeigh has steeped himself in the study of Ephesians, focusing on the Pauline epistle for this, his doctoral studies at the University of Sheffield in England. McVeigh is also the author of the official adult study guide, known in Adventist circles as the Quarterly. But in a sense, in the Good Word this quarter, we are plowing new ground because heretofore, the host has always been the author of the study guide. But in this case, Dr. McVeigh, whom I shall sometimes simply address as John, has not only written the Quarterly and the companion book available from the ABC, but has put together a rather monumental study guide, which is available online for your personal perusal. Now, this first lesson, Paul and the Ephesians is the title, I think, that John has given it. And at the risk of gobbling up all of our remaining time for this broadcast, I want to toss our leading question into John's lap and have him explore with us the question as to why a commentator would say that Ephesians might be the most influential document ever written.
He doesn't particularly explain himself when he says that, so we're left to wonder a bit. But one marker would be if you pick up most any summary of Christian beliefs, like the Seventh-day Adventist 28 fundamental beliefs that have a string of references, biblical references, following each statement. Mm-hmm. And you look at how many times Ephesians is cited, it's a lot. It more than pulls its weight, if you will, in terms of shaping Christian beliefs and values and so on.
I've noticed that there are quite a few passages from Ephesians that I have memorized, bits and pieces here and there. But, of course, it doesn't give you a perspective on the whole book. Now, the passages that John has suggested for this first lesson are the first two verses of chapter 1 and the last four verses of the letter, Ephesians 6, 21-24. But he also includes chapters 18 to 20 of the book of Acts. What do those chapters in Acts add to our understanding of Ephesians?
Well, of course, we're jumping one question here, which is often discussed, and that is, was this letter really written to Ephesus and to Christians in Ephesus? But let's assume that it was for the time being. And if so, then the stories in Acts become a bit of a prequel to Ephesians, because it's there that we hear about Paul's initial visit to Ephesus. We learn about his later visit at what we call the start of the third missionary journey, when he ministers there for 3 years, which is a long time for Paul. Mm-hmm. He doesn't usually hang around for that length of time.
He gets chased out of town too often.
Yes, and he does here too. And there's a number of incidents, of course, that happened during those 3 years. And then you'll remember that Paul meets with the elders of the church of Ephesus at a city about 50 miles from Ephesus by modern roads. And so we have these main incidents that happen in his relationship. And so it's interesting to study those scenes, to read them, and to ponder how they might inform our understanding of the epistle to the Ephesians.
Okay. Brant, do you have any observations you'd like to put in the pot here?
Back to your opening question, why might this document have been so significant? And I think if you were to ask most evangelical Christians the heart of the gospel, many of them would probably quote a verse from Ephesians, "For it is by grace that you have been saved through faith, and this not of yourselves, is a gift of God." And it seems to encapsulate in such a short, pithy statement the heart of the good news. But going on to the broader question here about these opening verses, as Dr. McVeigh has alluded to, the phrase "in Ephesus" may not be in some of the oldest manuscripts, but the letter needless to say, has huge value, especially in its relationship to Colossians and the other prison epistles, apparently written along with Philemon and the little book of Titus, or Philemon and Ephesians, and letters written as if Paul were in prison somewhere, chained for the gospel, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay. Now, can we sketch the theme or theological message of Ephesians, or might we be tempted to skip over such mm-hmm. matters in the interest of pondering the practical family and community matters at the end of the book?
Oh, well, you know, it does have, it seems like, a coherent theme. And, of course, we may come to that in lesson number 2 as we look at Ephesians chapter 1, verses 9 and 10. But if you had to put a name to it, you would say that the big deal is unity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not unity, small u, worrying about what color the church carpet is going to be, unity. It's cosmic scale unity.
Yeah.
It's everything unified in Christ.
In Christ, yep. That seems to be the motif of the opening two chapters. Everything is in him.
Once you start understanding that theme and thinking about it, you see it refracted in virtually every verse of the letter.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you get to his instructions to Christian households, and he's working out that theme of unity in the context of the Christian household.
Mm-hmm. All right. As I worked with Ephesians, trying to catch up with your background, and I'll admit that it's rather intimidating to have someone who's had such vast exposure to Ephesians. I can pull rank on you, though, John, because I'm more ancient than you are.
Well, there's enough interpretive challenges in Ephesians. The language is very fulsome, isn't it? Paul's adding adjectival phrase on prepositional phrase, and it's so grand-sounding, but at the end of one of those long, what someone has called tapeworm sentences, you can find yourself a little lost, and you can say, boy, that sounded great, but
what did he say?
What does it mean?
Yeah.
And so anyone can become a specialist on a few verses if they spend enough time at it.
Yeah. I remember one of my former colleagues, Ernie Bursey, and he and I still stay in touch. He suggested, and I forgot who it suggested, maybe it was HMS Richards, that every preacher ought to pick one book and become an expert on it.
Hmm.
And he did on the book Philemon. See,
so, one chapter.
One chapter. Yeah. So that's good. Now, if I were to ask you to select your favorite parts, and we'll do this at the end of the quarter again, your favorite part of the book Ephesians, what would you can you hazard?
In the opening chapters, when Paul talks about bringing the Jew and the Gentile together, again, this concept of unity, but making the two into one and breaking down the dividing wall between them, there's something beautiful about seeing the Gentiles brought into the commonwealth of the people of Israel. And for me, that includes me. I'm not a Jew. And so I know that this book is written for people just like me who have been brought into the commonwealth of Israel through faith in the Messiah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose if I had to answer the same question, Alden, I've really come to appreciate the description of Christ's exaltation at the end of chapter 1,
mm-hmm.
chapter 1, verses 20 through 23, and also the picture of the exaltation of Jesus, which is quite challenging piece in chapter 4, verses 8 to 10. Those snapshots, if you will, of the exaltation of Jesus have come to be very valuable to me.
Mm.
Now, let me ask a very personal question, John. How much of this book have you memorized?
Well, a friend and I, when I was teaching at PUC, memorized this book together and memorized the whole thing, and it was wonderful. The challenge, of course, is that I happened to memorize it in the NIV, and then you switch Bible translations, and you kind of lose the crispness of all that, and if you don't practice it, you can't just spit it out. So if you asked me to do it right now, I would not be able to do so. But I'd actually like to memorize it in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would be a blessing to you, but not to very many others.
True enough.
That's why
true
God
enough.
Gave the gift of interpretation of tongues.
Yes. Now, let me ask you a little more background. How was it that you ended up doing the quarterly for this?
Well, actually, I was asked to do it, but as I understand the story, and we'd have to ask our colleague Carl Kosart to confirm this, but I think he was asked to do the quarterly. And at the time, we were both working on volumes for the Seventh-day Adventist International Bible Commentary. I think he had finished some work on that, and I had just finished my work on Ephesians. And so he said to the individual who called, he said, listen, McVeigh's just finished the commentary on it and so on. Why don't you ask him? And so that's what's happened.
Yeah. Okay, good. If you could find, well, we'll come back to this several times, but I'm wondering if you could take your second choice of a book after Ephesians.
Well, you know, I love a lot of Bible books. But if you pressed me for a second choice, it would probably be Colossians. The two are very closely related, perhaps as close as any two documents outside the Gospels. We know their relationship, very closely related, and it can serve as a commentary on Ephesians in some ways, and vice versa. Paul seems to have composed them on the same basic pattern. There's kind of a shared outline, and then in Ephesians, he sandwiches these pieces about the church in and adjusts it in some ways, probably for the audience that he is presuming in Ephesus.
Now, one of the things that concerns me, and it concerned me as I prepared for this recording session, is that we have kind of been schooled in recent years, should we say, to ignore the Sabbath School Quarterly. Now, all of a sudden, we have one which requires us to really immerse ourselves in it. And it's going to be a marvelous experience, but it's kind of a cold shower after what we've been through.
Well, of course, if you go back to the old Sabbath School lessons, the old quarterlies, they had one page for each week, right? And it simply gave you the passages and a little bit of guidance. And so the advantage the quarterly has is it sketches out for us essentially one segment of Ephesians for each week.
Uh-huh.
And so the real value here, of course, is the text of Ephesians and immersing ourselves in that segment.
In the text, yeah.
Well, today we've explored some background information on Paul and his Ephesian correspondence. I want to thank our participants, John McVeigh and Grant Berglund, my conversation partners, and Kristen Byerly, our program engineer, and a grateful TY to each of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.